Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who's always up for hours and hours of podcast dialogue. I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. Here we go for episode number two of Survivor Edge of Extinction. And we are going to have a real fun time today. We're going to talk to Mr. Benjamin Coach Wade on the podcast. So it's been a minute since he's been back on. I believe it was October of 2014 was the last time that we did a regular podcast. And the irony is that it was, I believe it was Kelly Wentworth's boot episode the first time around. I think it's episode number five of San Juan del Sur. So we got a lot to catch up with Coach about here today on this podcast. Last night I had a lot of fun, of course, with Stephen Fishback going through everything in the Survivor Know-It-Alls. If you missed that, that's up on robhasawebsite.com. This weekend, going to talk to Lyrsa on the Survivor Feedback Show. If you got questions for the Feedback Show, going to record that one on Friday night. So a little bit of a quicker turnaround there. So make sure you get your questions in. Email the show, survivor at robhasawebsite.com. robhasawebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. We'll also be catching up with Josh Wiggler in the Wiggle Room. And then I will be talking with Puya and playing the This Week in Survivor History quiz on our newly minted This Week in Survivor episode, also coming this weekend. Before we get Coach on the line, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are friends over at the Legacy Box. Legacy Box, not Legacy Advantage. Legacy Box is great because they solve the problem that so many of us that we have all these home movies on these different forms of media that we have no way to access them. And that's where Legacy Box comes in because you just got the stuff all like in closets. Like, I'll do something with it someday. Someday is now because Legacy Box, when you sign up, they are going to send you a completely safe shipping container that you're going to put your stuff into, and then you're going to tag it all with stickers, and then Legacy Box is going to do the rest. They're going to update you every step along the way. It's such a great gift idea for anybody in your family that doesn't know how to, you know, hook up the VCR. You need a million wires. You could be the hero of your family when you go ahead and take care of this, because Legacy Box takes all of your old home movies and they professionally digitize your moments onto a thumb drive, a digital download, or a DVD. You're going to get all of your moments back along with the perfectly preserved digital copies, and you'll get an update every step of the way, up to 12 personalized email updates from Legacy Box. They're the world's largest, most trusted digitizer of home movies and photos. Over 450,000 families have trusted Legacy Box with over a decade of experience, and all the work is done by hand right here in the USA. There's never been a better time to digitally preserve your memories. Visit LegacyBox.com today to get started. They've got a limited time offer that they're giving our listeners an exclusive discount when you go to legacybox.com/Rob to get 40% off your first order. Go to legacybox.com/Rob and say 40% and get started preserving your past. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to have with us on the line today one of the, I'll say it, a survivor legend and an icon of the game. Here he is, the three-time Survivor player, Mr. Coach Wade. Coach, how are you?
Fantastic. Bushmaster, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Very excited to be able to catch up with you here during a season that I think there's a ton of reasons to talk to you about. So really excited to have you back with me here on the podcast, Coach.
Let's lay some ground rules in the beginning. First of all, I am banned from running on the treadmill. The last time we had me doing a podcast, I was running on the treadmill. Some people think that it was a wonderful thing. Other people were like, what's happening? I was breathing heavy at some parts in time. Now, since then, I've gone from the beginning of Survivor. Some people say, "Why? What coach was such an idiot the first time he played? And thank goodness I hadn't watched any Survivor before I played, or I would have maybe done things differently. And then the icon adjective that you gave me might be diminished. But I hadn't watched much Survivor, so I started from the beginning. I started watching, and lo and behold, Rob C, aka the Bushmaster, is sitting there, and he is literally kicking ass. I mean, some people say, oh, Rob Cesternino, blah, blah, blah. is the man. Some people say, oh, Rob Mariano. The first guy to really change the game of Survivor. I'm not just saying this. The first person to really change the game of Survivor in terms of strategy and maneuvering and going back and forth and weaving their way through the different obstacles and alliances was you. And so I developed a profound amount of respect. The best part of the season was when they were talking about the snake, the Bushmaster, and you said that that sounded like, I believe that you said it sounded like an 80s porno or something like that. And so it was so, I mean, I literally was cracking up like watching that. With my wife.
Something like that.
And it was at that point that I realized that I was banning myself from the treadmill because I needed to stop everything, shut down my life, forget about the three kids, forget about the fact that it's my oldest son's birthday today, and to focus on this interview. So that's why I'm calling you the Bushmaster and I'm not on a treadmill. Those are the two ground rules.
I appreciate that. And the listeners do too. So that you had done a full rewatch of the show and you eventually got up to my season. This was like a year or so ago. And I was getting a bunch of texts. You were like live texting me as you were watching and you were so complimentary. And I really did appreciate that, Coach.
Well, you know, I went out there in the first time I played and I'm like, I know that it's about deceit and I want to change the game. And so, you know, I go out there and really try to make it about getting the strongest to the end. That kind of fell flat on its face when my own Warrior Alliance voted me out. But, you know, I tried in some small way to change the game. And so that is what, you know, really I look at players and I can really appreciate those players that have, you know, really given us milestones. Richard Hatch, obviously, you know, change the game. I really think watching those early seasons that the producers wanted to make it about really about survival of the fittest, but also the psychological aspect of it. Richard Hatch made sure that that wasn't the case. You came in and changed the game as far as strategy and laid the groundwork. I think I might have changed it. Rupert changed it as far as big characters. Russell changed it, you know, looking for the idols. And so there are some iconic people that have really shaped the game, and I have profound respect to those people.
All right. Well, Coach, very nice of you to say that up front, and really excited to be able to connect with you because this is a season of Survivor where they're bringing back these returnees to play with new players, and it's something that they haven't done really a ton of since basically about 5 or 6 years since they were doing it a lot around the time that you went back for the third time. Were you excited to see them go back to this type of format?
Yeah, it's cool. You know, I mean, I got a phone call last year about that, you know, about going out on the season.
Yes.
And I just, you know, for me, as I get older, you know, I feel like I have maybe one more in me. I said I was retired for the longest season. I ran for the longest time. I was pretty adamant. It's funny. I talked to Probst after 23 and, you know, I said, you know, let's just talk about this, man. What do you think? You think I should go back on again? Because I feel like I shouldn't. And Probst said, as a producer, I want you to go on all the time. As a friend, I think probably this is going to be your best time ever playing the game, the most satisfying, the most fulfilling. You didn't win, but coming back again, chances are you're not going to be a leader and da 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 da. So then that really resonated in my mind. So for the longest time, I'm like, I'm retired. I don't really want to play again. Anyway, so last year, you know, when they called, I said, look, I got one more left in me. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to burn me on a non-legend season, whether we don't know if it's legends or not, but if you want to burn me on a season like that, you can. And they immediately, you know, withdrew me from consideration. So I was excited to see who they picked for the season, right? And I think it's a good strategic move from then. You know, you've got two people that are nerds in their own definition. You got two people that are kind of warriors. And so it was cool to see who they selected to come back. I'm excited about this. It's interesting to see that, you know, when I was going back on and Ozzy and, you know, Russell and Boston Rob, maybe not so much Russell, but everybody really wanted to kind of learn from those players and then maybe vote them out, you know, down the road. Now it appears that really these people want to get rid of the returning players. And maybe that's just, you know, a little bit of the editing, but it seems as if, you know, they're really on the hot seat early on.
You know, we jumped right into talking about this, and I thought it might be good that to get the update on everything that's changed in your life also since the last time you played, in case people haven't been following everything super close, but that you have a lot of different stuff going on since the last time you played, right?
Yeah, I mean, life has evolved. I think somebody maybe like you will gave me the advice, you know, as soon as you're done with Survivor, run back to your real life as soon as possible. And so I did that. You know, I tried the Hollywood thing, did a couple of movies, you know, colossal flops, and really realized that that wasn't, you know, the environment for my soul to be in. And so I came back to a small town in Northern California, focused on my symphony, developing a music academy up here, and really just trying to give back to a community that's embraced me before Survivor. It's probably the one place in the world where people don't call me coach, because I'm known here as the maestro and that kind of
maestro.
Stuff. Anyway, lots of stuff happened. Maestro, you can call me that for the rest of the interview, first master.
I will, maestro.
So I think that, you know, it's really, I mean, you know, three kids. 10 years ago, I said, okay, there's three things I'm never doing. I'm never going to get married. I'm never going to have kids. And as far as a career path, I'm never going to teach at a high school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was coaching college soccer and everything. And, you know, hey, 10 years later, those three things are have happened. And it's the three most fulfilling things in my life. And so I call it the non-bucket list. What I thought I wanted really wasn't what I needed. And what I needed really wasn't what I wanted. And so it's been a great 180, a great full circle to come to
180. That's your story.
Boom, plug. Little plug there.
Yes. And just a little bit to pull back the curtain, you are in between periods of school right now, correct?
Yeah, actually, this is my prep period right now. So I actually, you know, this small town, and the last music teacher at the high school retired. And so, you know, they asked me to take the job. I said, I don't want it. They asked me again. I said, no, thanks. They said, please just apply for it. I applied for the job. They made me the offer. I didn't take it for a month. I let it sit on the table for a month. But I saw that it could really help solidify the musical momentum in the community if I took the job. So I took it. Day two on the job, the bell schedule's driving me nuts. It's 8:06 in the morning. It just rang again. And I'm literally like freaking out thinking, how can I be here? I mean, I've not worked a job where I had to show up at a certain time for 28 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, you know, I felt like I have caged animal. And so it was a very difficult adjustment. I thought I was going to quit the first week, but then I saw the change in the students. I saw the culture of the high school, you know, blossoming, and, you know, my room being a safe haven for people that are eclectic and they love music and want to think outside the box. And we're adding music programs, and it's super cool, right? I mean, fulfilling to the nth degree. And so right now I'm on my prep period, and that's why I slotted it for us to do this. It's just completely different because for the last 28 years of my life, hey, you want to go get coffee? Yeah, great. Hey, go shopping during the day. I mean, I've got, you know, no rules, very little confines in my life. And all of a sudden it's like, dude, 8:00 in the morning till 3:06, I am ruled by that bell schedule. So it's definitely an adjustment.
Okay. All right. Well, Maestro, then let's get into talking about everything that's going on. And what I've noticed in this season is that the new players, they seem to, from the jump, hey, we got to get rid of the returnees. And I don't know, maybe it was always like that. And that the returning players that came back maybe were a little bit better suited to ride out the storm. Do you think that the new players have changed?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I've noticed, right? I mean, this last episode, I noticed that there was a lot of talk about us. Like, do you want to align with us? What do you guys feel about us in terms of the new players? And I felt like that was a mistake. I mean, you know, Aubrey said, what do you think about, you know, playing with us? And for me, if I go out there, I want to make it a very personal game. Hey, do you want to play with me? I'm loyal. You know, I can be trusted. And so I have attributes that should suit your game well. And I noticed that she said, what do you feel about the returning players instead of what do you feel about me? And so I feel like that was an initial mistake. I think that there is always that little bit of, oh, wow, I'm a fan of this person. But at the same time, this is my game. I mean, I think it's been mentioned on most seasons, but this season, it seems like it's really prevalent.
Have you seen any mistakes that the returning players are making in this type of environment so far?
I mean, when I went back, I tried to just relate to everybody, and I tried to, you know, make myself non-threatening and just, I'm here to help. And I think I remember saying early on, hey, I'm just here to help you guys. Use me as a wealth of information and cut me later. I feel like they're kind of taking a different tack than that. And they're, you know, looking for idols right off the bat, and they're, you know, strategizing, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, I think that they're making mistakes, but at the same time, you know, how can you really tell? I knew that when last week's episode ended with the returning players are in trouble, I was like, oh, obviously they're not in trouble. Of course, right. The edit actually hooked me. And I was like hooked last night thinking, wait, is Kelly going home? Even though I knew rationally, if I thought about it, that, you know, that she wasn't. So it's going to be interesting to see as the show progresses, if they're really in trouble. Maybe they're not, and maybe it's just editing.
Coach, how do you think it changes things up to have two returnees on a tribe with these new players, where when you and Ozzy played, you guys each had your own tribe, and it was sort of like, hey, it's Coach's tribe, it's Ozzy's tribe. But for David, he's there with Kelly. For Aubrey, she's there with Joe. How does that change the dynamic?
Sure. I mean, I think that, first of all, it gives him a comfort, right? I mean, I'm really surprised that, you know, Dave and Kelly aren't seeing eye to eye more than they should, because, you know, if Ozzy had been there on my tribe in the beginning, I would have told him the first day, dude, let's go, man. Let's, like, you know, we're in the minority. Let's stick together. I mean, getting an alliance 101, right? You take one person that you trust and you move on to the next, and you try to grab one more person until you have the numbers in your favor. And so I'm really surprised that they aren't appearing to work together more. I think it does change the dynamics. I mean, you know, when you're out there just by yourself, it's very hard to gain that momentum. Like we saw with Russell, it's hard to gain that momentum. So I would say that they should stick together, you know, especially until the merge. But it definitely changes the dynamics.
You know, it was interesting in those two seasons back to back in Redemption Island and then in South Pacific, there were no swaps either. So I think that really did lead to, you know, this idea of, hey, this is our group. It's our group versus their group. And you guys had a very divided post-merge. And even at the point where you and Ozzy were both there at the merge, that there was no room to work together, because you were so dug in with your group. Do you think that if we get to a point where the returning players get together, will they be sort of like forced to work against each other?
Yeah, I don't, you know, maybe. It depends, right? I mean, it depends on what they have coming into the game. I mean, Dave said a very interesting comment, and I'm not smart enough to connect the dots, but he said a very interesting comment. He said, I know Kelly's going to be gunning for me the first chance she gets. And that was really surprised to me, because I don't know what baggage these players have. And again, I'm not smart enough to remember, were they on the same season together? I mean, especially going back.
No,
and
they were.
One through.
Yeah.
Oh, they weren't. Okay. So, you know, I mean, to me, that's like surprising. It's like, forget about everything else, but let's come together and work. It would be interesting if there is a tribe swap. You know, it's also interesting. I never have been in a tribe swap.
Yeah.
It scares the heck out of me to think about that. Jessica, my wife, asked me the other day. She was like, oh, yeah, what was it like when you swapped? And I was like, I never swapped.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting if that happens. And also, it'll depend on where they are, right? I mean, if Kelly is in a solid alliance, or I don't even know if they call them alliances anymore, but if she feels comfortable with her position, she might feel threatened by the other returning players and try to get them out.
Okay, I want to look at this from a couple of different perspectives. From David's perspective, he seemed like he wanted to get rid of Kelly and potentially be the only returnee in that group. Do you think that is a mistake, or is that the right way he should be looking at it?
Well, Kelly actually stole a line from myself where I said kill or be killed. And actually, that was from Duke Koo Kim, the Korean fighter that got killed in the ring against Boom Boom Mancini. If you remember, I referred to that last time, that wrote on his lampshade, kill or be killed. But I mean, that is the art of war, right? And so we don't know what that baggage is. Some people could say, oh, well, why are you voting out Brandon? Because he's strong and you should take him to the end, which is where the Dragon Slayer quote actually came from, was an interview that I gave, a confessional that I gave about why am I voting off this guy? Because he's so strong. Well, dude, he's coming towards me. So, you know, if David knows that Kelly's gunning for him, obviously it's the right move. If she's not really gunning for him, and we haven't seen one moment so far where it really looks like she's gunning for him, then I think it's a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she hasn't mentioned it. And she, I think she's just busy trying to fight for her life, trying to take out these people right. that were coming for her. I actually thought that there was some similarity between what Kelly has gone through and a little bit of what you were facing in the beginning of Survivor South Pacific, where there were a couple of people like Christine, who seemed like that they were very much about the, hey, I don't want to work with the returning player.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty good with my life. I have very few regrets, but my goodness, I blew that final tribal council. I mean, I should have stood up and said, listen, you mother, you know, I was a target from day one.
Yeah.
Get off your fucking high horse and stop being bitter. And I mean, but I was so, I mean, my last final tribal that I was at, Russell was sitting there being so arrogant. And if he would have just been like, if he would have just humbled himself and said, look, guys, I played back to back. My head's not right. I've been away from my family. I did stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if he would have said that, he would have gotten votes. Guarantee you.
Yeah.
And he came off really arrogant. And so in my mind, I was like, I can't come across as arrogant. But in retrospect, I should have been like, you freaking clowns. But I didn't. But man, I was the target from day one. I mean, you know, if you go back and look at that season, you know, it's like, honestly, it reminded me of that when everybody was clapping for Joe. And it was like, yes, Joe and David. Okay, come over here. You know, I mean, it was that same thing. People were literally cheering for Ozzy, and I sit over next to my tribe and I'm ostracized. And Christine's like, this boy's got to go. And blam, Stacy, she was like, you know, oh man, I'm going to call him Benjamin. And so I was really faced with that adversity. But that first night on the beach, it's like, I got to connect. I got to grab people. And I made those five believe in themselves that we could do the impossible and get to the end of the game. So anyway, yeah, I would say that, you know, there is that ostracization, if I can use that word, in the beginning that happens. And, you know, we don't really know why where it comes from. If I were out there, I'd say, you know, Kelly, you know, she's a warrior. I would take her and make an alliance with her and say, let's go. We're in the minority. Let's run this thing.
This is a question from one of our listeners. Will from America wants to know, as a captain in South Pacific who was mostly able to control his tribe, how does a returning player have a dialogue with their teammates without being totally obvious about their intentions? We saw that Aubrey was being painted as somebody who was struggling to have these connections, and it looked like that she was using the same canned lines on a bunch of different people. How were you able to do this?
By the way, that was hilarious. That was hilarious editing, right?
It was very funny editing. You know, I think it was probably a little unfair to Aubrey.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that's the story that they're trying to tell in that episode. They're gonna flip and tell it. It was really, I thought maybe it was unfair, but at the same time, it was pretty funny to see her saying the exact same thing. For them to run those clips back to back to back was really funny.
I'm just saying I'm sure that you could take a super cut of me asking a very similar question to 19 different people also. So I just want to, you know, be proactive.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So anyway, I mean, for myself, look, I'm genuine. I don't care what anybody says. You know, I mean, the longer I'm out there, and the longer that I am starving myself, and the longer that I am practicing meditation, let's face it, how much meditation am I doing right now? I mean, I might do 15 minutes a week. I'm doing an hour plus a day on Survivor. Okay. Mm-hmm. Call it. I mean, you know, you can call it what you want to. I'm just going to give you the facts. I'm leaving my tribe for 2 hours at a time to go hiking and exploring and to sing, you know, songs to God and to pray and to meditate. And I'm starving myself. So I'm at a very highly, some people can say enlightened state. Some people can say whatever, but I mean, I'm in a different place. And so then I become so immersed with the show. I do not care one bit about strategy. I care about my word. I care about my character. I care about my vision, and I care about my fantasy that I am creating this world around me that is a safe environment in a very unsafe world. And it took me 3 times to really realize what I was doing out there. And so I come across as very normal and likable in the beginning. And so I just tried to relate to people, right? I didn't try to push my agenda on them. I didn't try to push my strategy on them. I just said, guys, here I am. If you make an alliance the first day and you stick to it, you can get to the end. And the entire time when Brandon and Albert and everybody else was trying to go off and talk to other people and make pseudo alliances, I'd bring everybody together for a team meeting. And I'd say, listen, guys, I mean, if you go against us, then we got to vote you out because you're too dangerous of a player. And Survivor has gotten completely away from that, right? I mean, I don't know when the last time somebody made an alliance of five on the first day and made it to the end. I don't know if they've done that in the last, they certainly haven't done that in the last five seasons, but it was very gratifying. I know it was boring to watch down the stretch because everybody knew what was going to happen, but I just tried to be relatable. I just tried to be likable. And instead of me saying, which was my mistake on the first two seasons, hey guys, here's my agenda. I've done this. I've gone all over the world. I've made myself a man. Let me help make you a man or a woman too. Let's use this experience to sharpen you. As you know, Brandon said it best. Nobody wants a freaking coach out here. So I dropped all that. And I'm like, I don't care about my journey so much as I care about your journey. And it was a real gift to both players. And then in return, it was a real gift to me.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that you did really well was just cultivate the idea of the group, because the more that people are splitting off into, you know, two people, three people going off and talking and they're having these conversations, but the more that you're bringing people into, you know, this circle of this is our group, this is the six, this is the seven in those seasons, that I think that that really does keep the idea that you're a big part of what's going on in the tribe as opposed to something that they have to get rid of from the tribe.
Exactly. I mean, look, I've created the alliance, and then I preached to that alliance. That's a bad word to use, and some people thought I used religion in that season to my own advantage. But I mean, I really talk to those people all the time. This is it. We can do it. We can get to the end. And listen, man, I saw it, right? I saw Cochran and Edna both came up to me and said, I'm the most hated person in the game. Cochran and Edna said, I'm the coattail rider in the game. You've won the game, coach. Take us to the end and you've won. And I knew that in that moment, and I saw it, and I had the numbers, and I could easily take them and put them on my side and vote people out systematically. And I didn't do it because I had to practice what I preached. I knew that it might cost me $1 million, but giving validity to your alliance was something that just became a natural part of the day. But it was hard work. I mean, I felt further gratified when I watched Brandon play again, and he was such a loose cannon. It made my game seem, you know, even more verified that I was able to calm him and corral him, because I got to tell you, every single day, a screw was about ready to pop loose. And every single day I had to take him and take him aside and talk to him and rationalize with him and calm him down. And so, you know, I felt like that was just part of my job as a coach. That's what we do as leaders. We take the people that are on the bottom and we make them feel special. And we take the people that are on top that help us win the game, like Albert, like he would help us win challenges. And I'd make sure that he was, you know, gratified. I nicknamed him G-Dub for, you know, the game winner. I was like, dude, you're the game winner, man. You're the clutch. You're the closer. And I made sure that he knew that. So anyway.
Yeah, and what you guys had built there with that group was so strong that you guys were able to recruit Cochran at the merge in that season. And I think that probably, I would say that, I think that that was maybe your top Survivor moment was the way that you guys were able to bring Cochran on board to you know, turn against his original tribe. I think that that was really incredible.
I would just please don't say you guys, and you can just say single-handedly, coach, you did it, because it was me. It wasn't the tribe. It was me. But anyway, yeah, that might have been my greatest moment. But actually, let me just tell you this. It was actually a very human moment, okay? We merged, and I looked at Cochran. His tribe is not letting him sleep in the shelter. And so I'm watching that. I'm watching how they treat him. They're treating him like a second-class citizen. And my heart went out to him, and my nickname for him was Hercules, because when he flipped, he was the strongest person in the game. He held all the power. And so he's even saved in my phone as Hercules. And but it was a very human moment. It was definitely gameplay, and it was very easy because I saw how they treated him. And I said, you know, man, you come over with us and you're going to be treated like you're one of the group. That was a big, big mistake on their part to just treat him as if he had no value. But you look at that all over Survivor. Watch any season and you'll see people taking for granted people that are on the outside, and then it happens that they split off from the group and, you know, vote that person out.
So in this episode that was last night, you have this young man, Keith, who is 19 years old, and I'm sure very different from Brandon, but I believe was Brandon also somebody who was 19 years old when he played, something like that, right? He was 19 or 20.
Yeah, he was. He was pretty young.
A young man, and it felt like to me that there was nobody really stepping up into that role of saying like, hey Keith, I'm here for you. It felt like that he could have used the support. He seemed to gravitate towards Chris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Right? Does that seem like the kind of person that you would have wanted to keep around in the game, Keith?
But I don't know, man. I mean, personally, yes. At Emerge, yes. But my word, I mean, I get the call for Survivor. Okay, Oreos, get on the treadmill, double it out, call my trainer. Dude, give me a 6-week warm-up and exercise that I can start getting into shape. The pool opens in March. I'm going to start going to the pool. I mean, come on, who doesn't do that? Huh? Who doesn't do that? And so I'm just like blown away that somebody would still show up on Survivor and they wouldn't be just moderately prepared physically for mm-hmm. what they're about ready to endure. So I would say no. Personality, yes. But as far as just being a complete wreck in challenges, I couldn't overlook that.
So the challenge performance is more important to you than the loyalty?
No, obviously, that loyalty is more important, but I want both, mm-hmm. right? I want to have both. And if a person is going to be that poor, I just can't see it.
Yeah.
I can't see staying with that person.
From the new player's perspective, do you like the idea? We heard War Dog talk about how look, Kelly's not going anywhere. She'll be a shield for us that she's going to take these votes before we do. Let's keep Kelly as a shield moving forward and get rid of the person who's holding us back in the challenges.
I got to tell you, man, that I just don't know. I mean, I know that there's a lot of strategy that goes on in the beginning, and I know that there's a lot of pseudo loyalties that go on in the beginning, and I know people want to keep the tribe strong. But I think sometimes you just got to roll the dice and you got to keep the tribe strong. I know that that sounds like it's old school Survivor.
Hmm. It's really difficult. I do think the thing that changes it, though, is that there is going to be this tribe swap that's going to happen at some point that I'd be very surprised. And maybe that's how Survivor could really shock the players one of these seasons and not do the tribe swap. But now a lot of these seasons, they swap, they swap twice. And so if there's somebody who you're not working with, like, I think it does make more sense to get rid of them, especially then, even if the tribe gets weak, then you could knock out another person if you have the number. So, I really could see it both ways.
Yeah. I mean, if it's all newbies, right? I think in an all-star season, it definitely does change dramatically, right? I mean, I fought for Randy because I felt like our immediate connection, even though we were the odd couple, was cool. And I knew that he was going to be loyal. And I said, let's vote out the most dangerous person in the game, who at that time I thought was Parvati. And so, it definitely depends. You've got all newbies and there is such an idea of tribe loyalty. There is that, ideology, and it flips back and forth. Having a season without a swap increases that. Having a season where you're doing multiple swaps decreases that. Mm-hmm. But, back to War Dog, I you should watch that episode again. I mean, I got an incredible amount of flack my first season for coming, looking good, and not performing well in challenges. And I own that. I didn't train right. I trained a different way, and I changed that the next two times I went on to make sure I didn't look like a fool. But I've been very disappointed in War Dog, because if you go back and watch his performance in the challenge, he's literally not helping move that snake up. He's mm-hmm. literally like not performing well in challenges. And so for him to come, it does remind me of myself a little bit, for him to then come back later in the episode and say, we should keep the tribe strong and da 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 da. I can see both sides of the coin, but I do want to just put it out there that I was rather disappointed. The best thing about him right now is really his name. That's about it.
You like it.
Because, well, I like his name, but I don't like anything else. I'm very disappointed. I felt like he was going to come out and kick ass and be a leader and do great in challenges and everything else. And I feel like he's fallen flat so far, but hopefully his creative arc is going to go someplace different.
Okay. I want to ask you about the Extinction Island, because you most recently played in a season that had Redemption Island, which I will add, you never had to go to. You did not need the services of the Redemption Island when you played. You've also been to Exile Island. Do you like the idea of Extinction Island?
Can you see that this season is made around me?
Well, yeah, I saw that. I did. I knew you touched on it at the top of the show. You mentioned it. I saw that Instagram post where you posted the picture of the dragon snuffer. And you said that I have the line. You said, I mean, when I saw this immunity idol on Survivor Extinction Island last night, I fell to my knees and wept. No wonder they asked me to be on that season.
See? And Isle of Extinction? I mean, dude, or Edge of Extinction? I mean, come on, man. That's like a glorified, everybody knows that there's never going to be a person that outdoes that outdoes my exile experience,
yes.
Right?
I you had the greatest Exile Island experience of any play in the history of the Exile Island. Nobody had a more memorable Exile Island visit.
I mean, Survivor is not one of my top memories in life. I'm sorry to disappoint everybody. But, you know, people are like, what's the highlight of your life? What's your greatest accomplishment? For me, no, not Survivor, but one of the greatest 3 days of my life is when I was on Exile. Anyway, so back to this season, since I do try to spin every one of Bushmaster's question into being revolving around Coach. But
this is your time.
Let's get back to the edge of Extinction. I actually like the idea. I mean, I feel like the cast is falling a little flat right now. And I know that there was a lot of intrepidation coming into the season. And maybe that's because, you know, there was a weird vibe that people didn't, you know, and the Lynn Spillman thing. And so maybe people were shook up about that. I do really like the idea of it. And I like the fact that, you know, the first vote out, I think she was actually really good, you know, because she was really negative and she was, you know, blah, 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 and, you know, what's this? And so I think that it was cool to see Reem go there first. I would like to see a little bit more of it. I mean, can we get like one flashback? Maybe it's not interesting yet with only one person. Maybe like in the middle of the episode next time with two people on there or three people or whenever that happens, maybe they'll flash to there. It's really going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I like the idea. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. People are complaining about new twists and let's just go back to old fashioned Survivor. But dude, they're still on, right? They're still on. They're making 40 seasons of this show. So obviously what they're doing is working, and it would be great to see an old school Survivor to come back, you know, 18 people, no swaps, no idols, but maybe at this point that would piss off, you know, half the fans off. So my hat's off to them for continually trying to push the envelope and come up with new ideas.
Okay, I have a question from Mike Brett, who asks, after surviving an ordeal on Exile Island in Tokenchines, what advice would Coach give to the folks that go to the edge of extinction?
So here's the thing. I said this, I only remember this because I was watching it with my oldest son the other day because we're going through Tokenchines. And there's a point in there where I'm like, look, I can do anything for 39 days. I can drink my own piss. I can eat my own crap. I can be covered with ants. I can bury myself in the sand. And I can be covered with tarantulas for 39 days, right? You can do anything for 39 days. If you're captured by indigenous people in the Amazon, there is no ending to that moment. You don't know if you're going to be there for two freaking weeks, for 2 months, or if that's the end of your life. On Survivor, you got 39 days. Your body will not die of starvation in 39 days. If you have an adequate water supply, you freaking suck it up. Sit there all day and daydream about happy times and do some meditation and walk through the portal that goes out into the forest where you can see the sunlight coming down through the leaves and you can lay down next to a cool, still, quiet pond and take yourself to another place. But by golly, you don't freaking quit. That's my advice. Mind over matter. Give me a break, people. You are not out there on the edge of extinction. Oh, nobody's here. I have been here for 3 days. I can't handle myself. Suck it up, people.
Mm-hmm. Is it an opportunity for these players to learn something about themselves?
Oh, of course. Let me be out there and coach. What they should have done is they should have had old Coach Wade out there as they come into the edge of extinction, sitting there in a prone state, meditating or maybe doing some Coach Chi That would have really blown my mind off. That would actually, now I wish I were out there.
Yeah.
That would have been the perfect scenario for me. Obviously, they can look great. Come on. When things get tough outside, there's two things that people do. They either make excuses or they look within and they sharpen themselves and they become a stronger person.
Coach, in the episode last night, Keith gets voted out. He's very salty. He walks off and then he sees this signpost says, hey, go this way to get a chance to go back into the game. Go this way. And your adventure has ended. And he seemed really conflicted.
He's a complete wanker. I mean, really, like, no. I'm sorry, but I'm just like, I'm not very negative, right? In negatives, I usually like to empower people, but I mean, like, I'm done with this guy, right? I mean, nobody should.
You hope he doesn't go to extinction.
Dude, if he doesn't go to Edge of Extinction, I will literally never shake his hand. If I see him at an event somewhere or a reunion show, I'm going to walk right by that guy. I got no time for that, right? I mean, if he does, I think that he's going to, right? I think he's just being a little mama's boy, thinking, well, I can go back to the apron strings or I can go out here and you know, suffer a little bit more. And I mean, I would imagine, actually, my favorite part of the episode is actually the moment that they see that sign and looking at the reaction on their faces. It's brilliant because I know, right? I know getting voted off, you know, like you're freaking done. The emotions that you're experiencing, you are gutted. But in the little back of your mind, you're like, well, at least now I get to have a Hershey's bar and dip it in peanut butter. And at least now I get to have some real food and I don't have to. I mean, there is that. Because, right, we cope as human beings, no matter what happens in our lives, we cope to whatever our new circumstances are. And when bad things happen, we make adjustments in our life. And so you are already rationalizing in your life how this new better life is going to be, even though you're completely gutted and not be on the show. So to see that you're still in the game, I mean, it's awesome. But I mean, for anybody to hesitate at that point,
yeah,
you know, give me a break. You didn't show up prepared for the show. You're obviously still not prepared for the show. You guys got to start getting some cojones.
So are you saying that they should get these people all the way to Ponderosa, put like the hamburger and fries in front of them and say like, okay, decision time, you want all this food or do you want the chance to go back into
that
the game?
Would be even better. There should be a lighted torch on one side and there should be a hot steaming hamburger, cheeseburger in paradise on the right side.
Yeah.
And then you'd have people that are going to be
compete.
Waffling.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm really curious if anybody, I mean, I know they gave us that teaser. So obviously he's going to, you know, Edge of Extinction, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously he's going to that island, Isle of Extinction.
I think so.
So obviously he's gone. But I mean, I really am curious to see if anybody does not take that road and just go straight to Ponderosa.
Yeah, it's interesting that one of the listeners, Emily, tweeted, in what circumstance could you see a castaway not going to Extinction Island? Quitting on the island, sure, but to not even take the chance to get back in? Who would do that?
Yeah, I saw that, right? I mean, it's almost worse than... No, I don't think it's worse than quitting in the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, quitting in the game is unforgivable, but it's pretty dang close, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Who would do that? Exactly. I saw that question and thought the same thing.
Sometimes people have these things where it's like they have an injury and it's like, well, I don't want to have to quit the game, but just vote me out. I could see somebody like in that scenario where they're dealing with something and they want to be out of the game. It's like a pseudo medical evacuation, but they say, okay, just vote me out.
Right.
It happens. Yep. It comes up sometimes. Yep. I'd love to hear your thoughts on Joe Anglum, who we didn't see a ton from last night. Do you have any thoughts on Joe?
I'm so jealous.
You're so jealous.
I mean, like, I thought that was the kind of love I was going to get when I first went out there.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly did not. It's really funny. I mean, the first time he played, I liked him. It really is interesting to see how this game shapes you. You know, I mean, I feel like some people, when they come back, their authenticity has been lost, right?
Mm-hmm.
I felt like Aubrey's confessionals last night, I hate to keep beating her up, but I felt like her confessionals were really like to the camera. And that's not what rings true, you know, to the viewers. They want to see authenticity. And so, you know, the cool thing about Joe is that he's being authentic. And the nickname Joe Amazing is pretty funny. I mean, I think he's going to do really well here, right? I mean, he's just got such a knack. With War Dog laying a complete egg in the challenges, you know, it looks like a slaughter is going to continue to happen because they're challenged. You know, they just aren't good in challenges. And with War Dog Goldbrick in it, I don't think that they have a chance. Joe is uniquely good in challenges. I mean, you know, I think Ozzy the same way. I'd sit there and watch Ozzy stack a deck of cards, and it's like, what do you do in your spare time? Are you sitting there as a waiter, like stacking playing cards? Like, how are you so good at these games? But some people just have a knack for being good. I understand the physical part of it, but Joe's good at everything. He's great in challenges. So I think that this season is built around somebody like him. I mean, it is.
Joe and Ozzy, that there is a similarity there, and where just like in South Pacific, the merge happened and Ozzy got knocked out, even the same time that when he came back again, and it was the same story. Are you seeing Joe do anything different that he's going to be able to avoid that same fate of couple of first time he doesn't win the immunity after the merge, he's going to get voted out?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really seen enough to make that decision. Is he endearing himself to people so much to the point that they will overlook the fact that he's going to be a great threat? So, you know, I don't know. But the good thing about this season, like I said, it was built for him. Even if he gets voted out, he still has a chance to get back in the game, which I see. I see him having an Aussie-type game and coming back into the game, late into the game, if he doesn't get voted off. I the main thing for me, I feel like he's coming off as authentic. And so for me, awesome. Hats off to him. And really, you know, David's coming authentic as well. And Kelly is too. I like that they're coming back and just saying, hey, this is me. I'm going to play the way that I know how to play. You know, Joe's still doing great in challenges. So, you know, he's still being Joe amazing, even though he wants less of that. I think the target is always going to be on his back.
Mm-hmm. Do you see a way that Aubrey could change the narrative that the other players are thinking about her?
Yeah, look, last time she played, she was on the bottom from the get-go, right? Mm-hmm. We all thought she was going to tap out, and she clawed her way up to the top. So obviously, even though I'm saying some negative things about her, I mean, obviously she's a fighter too, and she's able to go past all those internal fears that she has and the quirks that she has and not being the most athletic person, and she's a fighter. So they foreshadowed it. Hasn't happened. So, you know, maybe she'll start putting some strategy together and getting herself up off the bottom.
Coach, I know you are teaching these days. Do you have any thoughts on Ron Clark and how he's doing so far? Do you use the Ron Clark 55 rules in any of your teaching?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure if I can answer that question. You did call me coach, and I'm only
Maestro. I apologize. Maestro.
I'll let it slide this time. No, actually, it was really funny when his personality came out this last time and they were doing that cheer. It was actually a great editable moment in this time where he is leading, comma, and Aubrey is forced to be in front of him and she's like slightly bent over and he's back there doing his thing. It was completely hilarious. And then, of course, she says, oh, this whole kumbaya thing sucks. And then they win again 10 minutes later, and then they're all surrounding each other and it's kumbaya again. It was really funny. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, listen, he obviously is a sleeper for this game because he knows how to motivate people. He knows how to relate to people. He's funny. He's not a threat. So I think definitely, you know, Survivor is about managing your alliance, if there's such thing anymore, and managing the people around you and at the same time empowering them. And that's what teachers do. So I think he's going to have a really good game.
Now, do you think that the winner of this season will be one of the returnees, or do you think that a new player will take it?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that Joe's got a really good chance to win because he's very likable and he doesn't piss people off and he has that chance to come back or stay in the game and win those important challenges. So I think that he's got a really good shot at winning it. I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. Statistics tell us that the returning players have the majority of wins when they come back on Survivor versus the newbies. So I'd have to say a returning player is going to win it.
Aubrey said in the episode last night, she doesn't like this Kumbaya Survivor. She doesn't like that everybody is having fun and, being fake to each other. She would rather go to a tribal council and vote somebody out so we know where everybody stands. Do you think that she's looking at this correctly?
So, you know, with Aubrey saying that she wants to go to tribal council, there's so many times where people say that and it totally backfires on her. It's too bad that War Dog wasn't on her tribe blowing the challenge, and then they could have gone to challenge. She's got Joe Amazing with her, so high chances of them going to tribal council at the moment are slim. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, but I mean, there definitely is that moment where I feel that same way too. I mean, I remember when I went back on Heroes and Villains and we're going to tribal council, I go to tribal council that so that Jeff Probst can look at me like the prodigal son and say, "Coach, well done." We're on Heroes and Villains, first tribal council for the villains, and everybody's hemming and hawing around about stuff. And I raised my hand. I said, "Jeff, let me tell you what it's like. Let me tell you the real scoop." And he looks at me and smiles. I will never forget this. He smiles this big smile and he nods and he's like, "Coach, it's so good to have you back." I said, "Jeff, it's good to be back." And then I started going into a soliloquy. Anyway, I mean, it is cool to see her say that because it's true. You don't know anything about your tribe and you don't know if people are telling you the truth until you go to that very first tribal council. You know, I remember when I came back on Redemption Island, I was scared to death of that first tribal council. I thought I had the people, but you never know until the votes are cast.
Yeah, I do prefer the, you know, the certainty of knowing where everything is. But as somebody who got voted out in the first tribal council that his tribe went to, sometimes you're better off just living in Kumbaya Survivor. And for Aubrey, she might not like the answer if she goes to a tribal council. So
exactly.
I don't think you can't knock that Kumbaya Survivor.
Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah. Okay. Coach, let me give you this question from Wes Dorn, who wants to know, for you, besides winning, is there anything else that you want to accomplish on Survivor? Is there anything that's left off of your Survivor checklist that you want to make sure that you accomplish in your Survivor career?
I don't really think so. I mean, obviously, I'd like to win. I don't think that somebody like me can ever win the game.
Why?
But I think that... What's that?
Why can't somebody like you win the game?
I don't come across as... As we get down the stretch, and maybe it's because I'm in a too much of an enlightened state, but even just me saying that I'm in an enlightened state is going to be a threat to people. And so people... And it's been like this my whole life. People love me. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, they love me. And I got five people that really hate me and think I'm arrogant, and I'm really not arrogant, but there's five people out there that think that. On Survivor, there's, you know, 5 million people that think that. And so when I play, I'm so polarizing that I just can't be the Joe. I can't be the Tom Westman that I get to the end and say, "Guys, I played with integrity, but you know, I can't." I mean, his final tribal council speech was amazing. And the way that it came across, I can't be that guy. And so I'm always pissing people off down the stretch. They're always feeling like I'm full of it and I'm too full of myself and too grandiose. And I'm out there, man. I'm out there to film a show. I'm out there for an amazing adventure. I'm out there to create a world around myself that I can exist in a safe place and have an amazing mental, spiritual, and physical experience for as long as possible, hopefully 39 days. That doesn't come across good to people that are on the jury. And so anyway, that's why I think I can't win it. But I think that aside from winning, man, I've taken my tribe and led them from the beginning. I've gone out there and had an incredible exile experience. I've gone out there and have won individual immunity. You know, I don't really think there's anything left in the game for me.
So why are you interested in gearing up one more time?
I think I owe it to... I know this sounds silly, but I think I owe it to the fans. Mm-hmm. I think I owe it to, I don't owe it to my family because they would be wrecked when I leave. I mean, I'm like the center of my family. I'm like the rock. And so I think it would be really hard on my family. And that's actually, you know, the one thing that scares me the most is, am I emotionally strong enough to come out there? I'm in a completely different emotional state. I'm stronger than I used to be emotionally because, look, you could say whatever you want to about me. I can really make fun of myself now. And the first time I went on Survivor, I could not do that. I take myself a lot less seriously. People can throw anything they want to at me. And I am in such a state of comfort and peace in my life and my journey that nobody can touch me. And that certainly wasn't the case. You know, heroes and villains, I'm really shook up because people are still talking bad about me. But on the flip side, I'm in a very weakened emotional state because my family is my rock. And so leaving them would put an incredible amount of duress on them and therefore on myself. Anyway, so I think so, but I owe it to the fans. I owe it to myself. I owe it to that, you know, you say, you know, an icon, people say a legend. I mean, the coolest thing about the last decade is that nobody really has come along like me. So that further validates my place in the history of the game. There's been a bunch of Joes and Aussies and people that are great at challenges. There's been a bunch of Cochrans and Daves. I mean, those people are kind of easy to cast, and a bunch of strategy players, like Tony and Dom and Cass and Spencer, and, you know, we can just go on and on, but I feel like it would validate my place in the game. I mean, I'm here to leave a legacy. I'm here to leave a legacy through my kids. I'm here to leave a legacy in Susanville with my symphony, with the school, with music. I'm here to leave a legacy on the game of Survivor. So I think it would further that legacy to do it one more time. I am going to go in, though, in a great mental state because I know that I'm not going to win. And because of that, it'll release me from my performance. If it's one episode, 12 episodes, I'm going to enjoy the ride to do it one last time, but also knowing that it's your last time, right? I mean, when you went out the second time, you didn't know if that was going to be your second time, third, you know, if you're going to come back again.
Well, there was
again,
no such thing as third me. Time. So we didn't know anything.
That's going to change. That's going to change, man. Yeah. You have to leave yourself in the history of the game. I think you're going to play again. But anyway, I mean, you don't know when you go out there, oh, I might play again. And so that's in the back of your mind. I better not screw up this time. I know it's going to be my last time.
Yeah.
So, all the gloves off, and I can just really be free.
One of the things that I've noticed, and, you know, I do follow, you know, what the people, the fans, the Survivor fans are talking about, you know, as much as I can, not to say that I know what everybody is thinking, but it seems to me that young people, young Survivor fans seem to really have an affinity for you. And I do think that it is something that plays in your favor, that I think that people look at you as this, you know, wise oracle coach. I think that these young kids that grew up watching the show, I think that there is a real reverence for you.
I mean, it's cool, right? I don't know. I mean, I'm, it certainly has been cool because, you know, that first time I went on, man, people thought I was completely full of it. They hated me. And to see that change and to have some metamorphosis into doing that is really cool. It's funny because, Spencer had texted me the other day just to say hi.
Me too.
And we were talking and I threw something at him and I was like, just a quote that I had underlined from a book that I was reading that talks about fate. He was like, I love that, man. Let me post that up. And, you know, I'm like, okay, cool. Post it up. But it's like, you know, they look at me like that and that's cool. I think it's because I'm different and because I stand on my own 2 feet and I like to be an original. I think that whole, there was a whole tweet sequence that started with Spencer saying, you know, authenticity is everything. You know, that's one thing, you know, you can love me, you can hate me, but I'm going to be authentic. I'm going to be authentic to myself. And hopefully that comes across to the audience as, you know, they can see that as well. I play life with my heart and I play it for something that is bigger than myself. I play it, you know, for that legacy that I want to leave.
Coach Kristen Cole wants to know, the coach, you've kept the long locks. She loves it. How often do you get recognized in public from Survivor fans? Do any of your students ever recognize you also?
Yeah, everybody knows that the Dragon Slayer came to Lassen High School and is teaching here. You know, it's funny because I'm going bald, man. You know, I mean, you can't really see it yet, but I feel it's like I'm losing my hair. And I'm like, no, I can't lose the hair. I've kept them. And I'm saying this, you know, just, for example, I was with Adam Klein at the Running Up Reno.
Yeah.
And we're sitting and he had just won. And so I'm like, man, I'm sitting next to somebody that's won the game. It's really cool, right? Because I've never done that. And people were coming up and they were saying, Coach, what's happening? And they were like, wait, did you play? Are you a Survivor too? And Adam's like, yeah, I get this a lot. And so it is cool that, you know, people recognize me all the time. And it's interesting because in the last 3 or 4 years, it hasn't really slowed down. And so I notice, you know, like if I wear my hair half up or half down and I travel, like 100%, I'm going to get stopped, you know, a bunch. And if I wear it, you know, all the way up, it's a little bit less. If I wear it down, it's kind of in the middle. So it's cool. I mean, I appreciate it. I'm very, you know, as we all are, right? I've never seen a survivor that's really a jerk to the public. Maybe they're out there, but all of us feel really touched by this experience. And we feel very indebted to the fans that have kept the show going. And so, you know, like all of us, I definitely give my time to those people that recognize me.
Okay. Maestro, this is a question for you from Aaron Flea Sperling, who wants to know, what do you think is the ideal season 40 theme? And is there anybody that you feel like has to be there?
I think that the season 40 theme, it's interesting, right? Because everybody's talked about legends. It's going to be legends. It's going to be legends. It's going to be legends. And what happened last time? Season 30. I mean, man, that was like a, what? It's an all new cast. It was crazy. And it shook all of us. And we were like, well, I guess they're not, they like going and being unpredictable. And that's totally cool. So everybody thinks it's going to be a legend season. I'm going to do not take credit for this, Rob C., but I'm going to tweet this later today that I think that probably the most epic season of Survivor that could happen is winners versus first boots, which could see the return of the Bushmaster. Now,
I was neither.
Were you first in the whole season?
No. that I got knocked out by your buddy Boston Rob back in the ice, but it wasn't first.
You were okay. Darn. So I can't squeeze you in. See, I was trying to think of a theme that could squeeze you in. Okay, but I do think it would be really cool. First boot versus winners, and to see how, you know, hungry those players that were first booted, and there's been some really cool first boots. So that's what I think would be an amazing season.
Yes. Why is there a first boot from one of your seasons that you would like to see come back? Now you never went to the first tribal council.
Wow. Is that a really?
Right. Because that, who was out? Carolina got voted out your first season, then Sugar, and then, Semhar. So you've avoided the first tribal council all those times.
Dude, you're such an awesome memory for the game. That's true. I didn't even remember Semhar.
I saw her recently. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I guess no first boots on my seasons.
Yeah. Okay. So none of them are coming for you. None of them are saying like, oh, I got to knock out coach. He knocked me out first.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's good. That's good. Coach. All right. I know that that bell's almost about to ring. Let me ask you quickly, Maestro. Kenny O'Connor says, how can one find happiness in life?
Wow. I mean, I could talk for the next 20 minutes about that.
Well, that bell's going to ring in five minutes.
I know, right? You know, happiness in life, I have to just impress on people that happiness in life is not about things, and we know that, but it's really about looking within. I would say that most people these days do not know who they are on the deep inside. And I probably wouldn't have known who I was on the inside if I hadn't taken the kayak trip for 6 months and all I had was the ocean and the voice of God and myself to deal with. You know, it was very eye-opening. And we sell ourselves with a false sense of identity. We put on these masks and we think that we're not quitters and we think that we're confident and we think that we're happy. And we really have no way of knowing about ourselves because of these shackles of society, our cell phones and social media and the computer and, you know, our own networks and our own lives. And to just, that's one of the things that I truly love about Survivor is that you get rid of all that stuff and you get rid of the veneer and you get down to your true self on the inside. So instead of looking outside to get that happiness, you look to the inside. Once you find out who you are, you can determine your strengths and weaknesses. You can take your weaknesses and make them your strengths, and you can take your strengths and you can become invincible. And I think that that's something that I would love for everybody to understand in this world.
What is the best way for a person to find out who they are?
Put down a cell phone, turn off the TV, stop talking to people, get out in the wilderness for at least 3 days.
Okay.
And commune with the creator of the universe and start listening to that inside chatter of your own life. You can't do it, right? I mean, even now, I love being to look inside, but it's like I wake up in the morning, cell phone, Bible verse of the day, look at my kids, they're coming in, fix breakfast, go to school, da 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 da. If I get a free second, I'm checking my cell phone, I'm looking at my email, maybe I'm reading a book of ancient, you know, Chinese philosophy, and then it's like time for bed. So I don't even have time to look within. You got to get rid of all those distractions, and that's why we have to make a conscious effort to do that, to break away from it all and just listen to that internal voice that's trying to talk to us, but we can't hear.
Yeah, coach, that's so wise. I think we look external. I gotta find this. What does it mean? I gotta find something that's gonna tell me. And you say, turn it all off, go to the edge of extinction, and it's internal. Sit there, it's quiet, and then you'll figure it out.
Yep.
Okay. That's great stuff.
Look at the magazine. You know,
Maestro.
Open up a magazine. There you go.
Yes.
Open up a magazine. What is it selling? You get the right girlfriend. You get the right look. You get the right watch. You get the right car. You get the right home. You get the right location. You go on the right vacation. That's going to make you happy. Open up any magazine today, and they're spending millions of dollars selling that to the general public. None of that stuff really is going to give you happiness.
Okay, last thing, Maestro. I was looking at your Instagram. I saw that post about that you were asked back for this season. I also saw Wacky Wednesday driving to work, and this came on, reminded me of crushing the 1989 lip sync contest at West High School in Knoxville, Tennessee, with Mike Kelly, and the song was Wild Thing. Is that right?
By the way, I love you. Okay, you are the man.
Thank you, Maestro.
It was Wild Thing.
Tone Loc,
Funky Cole Medina.
Yes.
The year before, and then I did Wild Thing, or it was vice versa. Tone Loc, my man, saw him at the airport once. That was the closest I got to him. I was like, yo, what's up, man? He was like, what's happening, coach? He didn't say coach, actually. I just made that up, but he did say it was happening. Yeah, man, I crushed that lip sync, dude. Crushed it. First place. That's my claim to fame. People ask me, what is your number one goal accomplishment in life? The Survivor application asks us that, right, when we're going to come back. The number one accomplishment being with Mike Kelly, Wild Thing, Tone Loc, 1988 or 89, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Lip sync.
Yes.
Crushed it.
And do you dance when you sing Wild Thing?
I still have the video.
Please post it.
Have the video.
Please post it for us.
I know. I got to figure out how to get it on from tape.
Yes.
To something that I can post.
I got
online.
A guy. I got a legacy box. Well, I'll send you the info. And then, coach, that I know that bell's about to ring. So tell people where if they want to see more about your 2019 Instagram posts and all that stuff. Where should people go?
Gotcha. Okay, so Twitter, the real coach, the underscore real underscore coach. My Instagram is Dragon Slayer Coach. I post about life, and I do post about Survivor. And then that's it, right? Those are the only two things I have. Oh, Facebook, but who does Facebook anymore? I do Facebook a little bit.
A little bit.
I'm Benjamin Coach Wade. I had to legally, you know, I was like blocked on Facebook because I was using Coach, which wasn't my real name. I said, listen, and I crammed it down their cram hole. And finally, they relented and said, okay, you can be Benjamin Coach Wade. No parentheses under the coach. Anyway, that's how you can see my action, what I'm doing in life.
Okay. Maestro, I'm a man of my word that you said you had a period for me, and this was so great to catch up. Thank you for coming on with us and talking about everything with Survivor and, more importantly, life.
Exactly. And it was awesome, man. I love doing this, and it was great to actually do this. And, you know, to know you better.
No treadmill.
Reno,
yes.
Also, exactly. And no treadmill. I was very focused this time. I hope you noticed the difference.
It meant the world to me that you did it. And I really appreciate it. So enjoy the rest of the day. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll see you back out there soon.
I mean, here's the thing, last parting shot, but you know, I mean, I must've done so bad on the last podcast. Heck, you haven't had me back for like 20 years, man. So I was thinking about that. I said, I must've been so bad that he just discarded like an old shoe, and I've got to resurrect myself.
You've
for this
done
interview
it.
And really You've be on my it. A game.
Yes, you were on. You were on your A game, and you brought it. And this was really fantastic. So thank you so much, Maestro.
Awesome, thanks, my man.
Okay, enjoy the rest of your day. Okay.
Okay, you too.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Coach on the podcast. And I thought that was a nice, tight interview with Coach. So Coach did a really good job. No treadmill, no driving in the car. Thought he really nailed it today. So I really appreciate Coach coming on with me. So also appreciate you guys listening to the podcast. And we're going to have a lot more fun this week. Looking forward to catching up with Lyrsa. Get your feedback questions in. Going to talk to Puya. And then we're going to talk to Josh Wiggler. And hopefully we'll have another fun wand off like we did for week number one. Of course, we could not do this all without the support of the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast, because they are the people that say, hey, I love all this content. I love everything that's most of the things that are happening here on Rob as a Podcast, and I want more. So they get access to the Patreon podcast feed and everything that we're doing in the Patreon community. To find out more about it all, go to robhasawebsite.com/patron for more information. robhasawebsite.com/patron. And thanks to the patrons for over 5 years of me doing the podcast full time. Okay, that's going to do it for us here today. Thanks so much again to Coach and to Scott St. Pierre for putting this all together. It's going to be a short turnaround until you hear from me again. I'm going to talk to Lyrsa on Friday evening. So with any luck, we'll have that podcast out for you guys early Saturday this week. So it'll be a quick turnaround for the feedback show. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.